The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina.
To the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only It's Time to Make Professional Wrestling an Olympic Sport podcast.
Yes, it is.
I'm Joel Gasson with John Fraser, as usual. Plenty to get to. Because the Riders played last Thursday, it's felt like an eternity since that game.
Mm-hmm.
But they did lose to the Montreal Alouettes in a game that's probably not surprising that they lost, but for Rider fans, probably still disappointed in how they lost. Mm-hmm. So we will get into that a little bit. We will also talk about this week's matchup coming up on Saturday against the Edmonton Elks, because in a strange way, this is going to be a very good test for this team. We'll get into that. And we'll also get into a little bit about Nathan Rourke and what he should be doing and sort of what our thoughts on his situation right now.
Yes. However, to Winnipeg. I don't care how it happens. Come to Winnipeg, Nathan Rourke.
However, it's July 30th, Tuesday, as we record this. The Olympics have been going on.
Yep.
And admittedly, I've watched more of it than I thought I would to this point.
Yeah, because we were on here talking about how there was a lack of hype, how nobody was really into it. But now it's here, and I'm with you. Like, I'm not on paternal leave like you, but I'm watching as much as I can at work.
Yeah, like, admittedly, during the day when I'm just at home doing stuff, it is... It's great, easy background TV rather than trying
fantastic.
To find, you know, whether to just put it on some other channel that I've watched a million times or something else, you know. Like, okay, Tuesdays, I spend my Tuesday mornings watching Raw that I recorded from the night before. So that's easy filler time.
Easy.
But for the most part, other than that, I'm like, you know, going through different Pluto TV channels or like putting on different channels that I watch regularly on cable. Yes, I still have cable. And... You know, this is just a nice to, like, switch it up and have something else on in the background that I'm like, okay, I can kind of watch this without having to actually really watch it that deeply.
I'm surprised that you're not just playing, like, computer versus computer and College Football 25.
I don't really want
that. That comes after the Olympics. Okay.
Maybe. Maybe. I haven't really thought of it, but that seems a little too extreme. I don't know.
During the pandemic, I'm not going to lie, just to feel a little normal, I did that with my copy of NHL 18. I was like having a couple drinks and there was no sports going on. And I'm like, okay, I turned on computer versus computer, Jets and Maple Leafs, drank a couple beers, and it felt kind of normal for a hot minute.
For until you realized that whatever happened, this would actually never happen in real life.
yeah, the Jets and Leafs were playing for the Stanley
Cup. I mean, if it's anything like the games I played last night in my dynasty, they would be entertaining because neither defense could make a stop an entire game. So
That's fair, right? But I don't think it'd be as entertaining as the idea that the shutdown fullcast had this week. And an idea that I co-opted, and to quote you... fucking brilliant, the execution. So thank you, Joel Gasson. I had to get that out there.
Yes, one of the members of the Shutdown Fullcast, sorry, I don't remember who, I think it was Jason Kirk, suggested on the old Twitter machine that professional wrestling should be an Olympic sport.
Yes.
And yes, I know, like, Greek, Greco, amateur wrestling, whatever you want to call it, I believe it's still an Olympic sport.
Yes.
I think it went away for a bit, but it's back now. Anyway. And obviously, yes, lots of merit there. Great physical athletic sport.
Yes.
But professional wrestling is a whole other genre.
Yes.
And before you laugh too much at the thought of this, and I know it's absolutely never going to happen. Obviously the idea more so was floated on originally as in like having like an actual card and, you know, countries compete against each other, but when a sport is scripted, that's a little more difficult to kind of pull off in sort of an Olympic venue in sort of that sort of scenario, because well, you've determined the gold medal winner before anything even happens.
Right.
So then you had the idea, and you quote tweeted this online and suggested that countries would send their best professional wrestlers, and they would actually wrestle each other, and then it would essentially be judged like any other artistic sport at the Olympics, like various, like some gymnastics, like figure skating, like synchronized swimming, that sort of thing, but instead it's just It's wrestling. Professional wrestling.
The precedent is there. Solo synchronized swimming used to be a thing. Okay? You can't tell me that's much harder to do than, like, put on a match. And I think it'd be really cool. Like, I think it'd be different. And it's one of those things that curiosity would be piqued. Like, I keep trying to watch, like, breakdancing or skateboarding or some of these other new ones at the Olympics. I haven't found them yet. But, yeah, imagine – and you're scored not on who wins, right? So you get two Canadian wrestlers in there. You get a barn full of people. And, like, you let the athletes, like, pick their entrance music, pick their pyro, pick how they're going to come in. You know, maybe you have a quick segment for, you know, for some talking. And then you score it on, like – execution of the crowd and execution of moves, and like somebody misses and you deduct them points and crowd involvement and through the tables and stuff. You could legitimately make this happen, and I would watch the shit out of it.
Yeah, I think it would be great. And I mean, the thing in the Olympics right now at these certain levels is, you know, variations of the same sport, and wrestling's right. just full of it, right? You have a men's category, you have a women's category, you have a tag team category. Like, there's all kinds of different events you could create just out of this alone before you get into really gimmicky matches, even if you really wanted to. Because, I mean, if we can have 3-on-3 basketball and full basketball, then why not, you know, 3 or 4 different types of wrestling, right?
And that's exactly it. I feel like people would watch because it would almost be like acknowledging that how much these people are athletes. Like, pro wrestlers are athletes. I get it. You know, the outcomes are scripted, the storylines are scripted, but what they go through is absolutely incredible. And if you disagree with that, you're wrong. Secondly, I think it would almost be a way to kind of embrace the athleticism while saying, okay, we know this is scripted. We're going to embrace it. We're going to put on a show. We're going to get the crowd involved, and we're going to have judges. Like, I just think it would be so cool. And, like, you do, like, a 15-minute match. You get your scores. You know, maybe you do it over, like, 2 different nights. Kind of like figure skating. You have, like, the first night, and, you know, you get your ranking, and then maybe you have to step it up. Maybe you have to go full Hardy Boys and go a moonsault through a table to try to win gold the next night. Like, you know, figure skaters make their routines more dangerous as it goes on. Like, maybe you got somebody doing the Shane O'Mac Hell in a Cell, jumping off the top of the cell into the announcer table. Like, I think it would be great, and you'd have such an opportunity. Like, I just imagine, like, Michael Cole doing play-by-play, but then, like, a legit, like, get, like, Undertaker or one of the greats sitting there to be like, yeah, that's really good execution on that move, the ankle lock, he's selling it, right? And, like, it would be fantastic, and I want to see this. I know I will never see this in my lifetime, but here's a point. Rob King, he brought this up. Rob was like, hey, I hate to bring up the no fun reason, but the reason why it couldn't happen is there's no governing body. Does that mean we could hypothetically start a governing body, Joel?
I mean, I suppose.
Right. So that's the first step. We make the governing body of Olympic professional wrestling. We start that. And then the tough part is, here's the other wrinkle. And you and I were discussing this, you know, during our preamp. You might not just take your 2 best wrestlers, right? Like, the U.S. is probably not just grabbing Cena and The Rock. You're grabbing 2 guys that could play off each other and have a great match. And I think that would make the selection extremely dynamic. Then you could work it in to your storylines, you know, at SmackDown or Raw or AEW. Like, and it's such an internationally embraced thing, right? Like, you've got a hotbed in Japan, in Mexico. Like, you'd be literally comparing the styles of, say, the Luchadore wrestling to, you know, the Rock and Stone Cold or what we're doing here in Canada. Like, how does this fail? I feel like I'm on to the next big thing, and I need to make money off of this. Like, I legitimately, I'm like, I feel like I'm like, you have those moments in your life that you're like, I wish I would have wrote this down. I wish I would have followed through on it. And I feel like this should be my idea to follow through on, because this needs to happen, and I feel like it could make me rich.
I don't know about rich, but it would certainly be entertaining and would add a certain spice to the Olympics. And I mean, the WWE was in France a few months ago for a pay-per-view, and it was electric.
They're Japan right now.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, wrestling's always been big in Japan, so that's not surprising. The issue, I always thought, I'm like, oh, they're going to France. I'm like, I saw the crowd and I listened to the crowd, I'm like, holy cow. Like, I never imagined that professional wrestling would actually be a thing in France, because it seems like a thing you would think culturally is below the people of France.
Right. And even
no offense to anyone involved, both France or wrestling, but it's just, I didn't expect it. So clearly, where the Olympics are this year, this is a thing that would work. However, if it were in this specific edition of the Olympics, I don't want this by the Eiffel Tower. I don't just want this in this beautiful building where they have the fencing. This, like, the professional wrestling Olympics has to be in like a school gym or a cultural hall or some kind of dank hall, like something just. Something pure indie. I don't want, like, I love overproduced professional wrestling, but this has to be pure, like, independent wrestling in front of, like, four people.
See, I want it to be the other way around. I want it in, like, a 10,000-seat stadium where you can do whatever the hell you want with pyro, because I feel like you could, like, do, like, the pyro in the production, and then those guys could be eligible for, like, I know coaches don't get medals at the Olympics, but you could be like, oh, they've got... You know, it was a controversial pick because they took the AEW pyro guy over the SmackDown pyro guy and, you know, the video guy. Like, I just feel like there's so much that goes into it that you could have this whole crew of people. I'd want it 10,000 people or, like you, in front of four people. Like, there's no in between for
me. Have it in it. I think sort of for leveling the playing field, you have to have it in a small hall because, you know, there's some places where maybe they only have an independent wrestling scene. And they don't really have anyone at the highest level to bring in to do that. So I think in terms of fairness, yeah, you put it in a school gym somewhere in front of like 300 people.
I think that would be cool. Could you imagine how cool that would be to be part of the 300 people audience at Olympic Pro Wrestling? And again, now all the talk with the Olympics is finding places that, you know, using existing venues and how, you know, LA, it's going back to LA because of the venues. It's going back to Salt Lake City because of the venues, right? And honestly, this is one you could do winter or summer games.
If you're doing it in a school gym, I would lean towards winter because school gym would be like ungodly awful in the summer.
Well, that's it. And now all of a sudden, like, imagine like your high school gym having a plaque outside. This was the home of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn winning gold for Canada in the first ever Olympic professional wrestling. Like, we are onto something here, Joel Gasson, and I feel like it could work. And honestly, it has more, like, I know the number one knock against new sports coming in, like, I look at lacrosse, me being a lacrosse guy, the number one knock is Canada and the U.S. is going to run away with this, right? It's the same argument that why women's hockey has been looked at it maybe not being allowed to be in the Olympics because it's us in the U.S. every single year.
I don't think that's true, professional. Yeah, like professional wrestling, that's 100% not true. Like, yeah, a number of them are American, but I mean, if you look at the SummerSlam card coming up this weekend, like half of the people are from other countries or have ancestries or at least have ancestries related to other countries.
Right. Like, could you imagine had we had this idea and executed it somehow at like the 2000s games, like Rey Mysterio would have won every medal. Like that guy, like the acrobatics, the luchadore mask, like Mexico would have had like 7 gold medals just based on Rey Mysterio. He would have jumped to the pool for some reason and won a medal. I don't know why I went there, but fuck it. Let's roll with it.
Yep.
So make it happen. Let's do it. Let's start the international governing body of professional wrestling. The only downside is, and the only thing that might kill this whole plan, drug testing.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Might need to get around that.
It's not. I mean, we're not doing this in the 80s, at least. So.
That's fair. No, that is absolutely fair. And it's the kind of sport that you could have like 40, 50 year old athletes, right? Like. Does the U.S. go with John Cena? Did you bring The Rock out there, right? Like, there's no way for this to fail. And I now need to look into, and this is what I'm going to do at work now. I'm going to look into what it takes to start an international governing body so we can make this a reality by the time we die, Joel Gasson.
One thing is a reality, that is that the Riders lost to the Montreal Alouettes. So we will... We will get into that this week's game against the Elks and Nathan Rourke's future as well. But as always, for the Pile of Bowens Brewing Company, John, what is in the glass this week?
It was a day. And as I can best describe it to you, I'm pouring myself a very large vodka and coming down to record. So I am drinking a very large glass of vodka from my go-to Winnipeg Jets mug. Lucky Bastard Vodka, of course, from our friends at Lucky Bastard Distilleries. Hi, Bryce and Hannah. Thanks for listening.
For me, from Nokomis Craft Ales out of mighty Nokomis, Saskatchewan, the Golden Ale. Just a nice, easy drinking light beer that, well, I guess it's not a light beer, but it's light flavored and tastes like beer. So
yeah, beers that taste like beer is exactly what you want on a Sunday night or summer night, unless you hate your job today and just need to get as much alcohol in your system as quickly as possible.
Riders probably hated their job a little bit on Sunday, at least in the aftermath of what was, I'm not going to say a bad or really great, but sort of weirdly entertaining game.
Yeah.
Between the Riders and the Alouettes. Like, it was not a masterpiece. It was not a classic. Like, by, you know, 5 weeks from now, we'll probably have completely forgotten everything about that game, as I tend to do. But it was weirdly compelling in some ways. Yep. Compelling maybe was the word, more so than entertaining. Obviously, they came out in the first half and just kicked the shit out of the Montreal Alouettes in every single aspect of the game.
Yes.
And they took that 16-3 lead into half, and it probably could have been a little higher, frankly. And I think in the end, that sort of cost them a little bit because Jason Maas, unlike the Edmonton Elks, decided right away that his quarterback wasn't good enough and made the switch to one Davis Alexander, who I know caught a lot of people off guard with how well he played. Not that I expected him to come in and light the world on fire as well as he did, but getting to chat with some of the people in, you know, as part of Three Down Nation,
yeah,
some of them thought that he had a pretty good chance at being a decent quarterback in this league. So I wasn't totally shocked that this guy came off the bench and was good. I was shocked that he came out and completed like his first 12 passes and scored 3 touchdowns right away. Like, that was, or whatever it was. That was
18 is how he ended the night.
Yeah. Yeah. And he made his first 12 in a row. So, I mean, that part was a little surprising, but, I mean, the fact that he came out and played better than Caleb Evans did not surprise me, because, no. For one, I'm not much of a Caleb Evans believer. I know he's still young, but I think there's enough of a sample size on him now at this point that he is what he is. Good short yardage back, good in spurts, but not a guy you can really rely on to win you a bunch of football games. And I think the biggest takeaway from that game isn't so much that they lost to the Alouettes, it's how they lost. And it's not even that they blew the lead. Like, you blow a lead. Like, that happens sometimes over the course of an 18-game season, especially against a very good team like the Alouettes. The issue was they just, it was a comedy of errors and a lot of really dumb things that you just can't do against a team that could potentially win back-to-back Grey Cups. And I think it was all sort of, you know, it was all wound up and it was a perfect encapsulation of the entire game when Mitch Pickton stepped out of bounds before catching what would have kept a potential game-winning drive alive at the very end.
How does TSN not show the replay of that for, like, ever?
I know.
I was busy Thursday night. I worked late. I came home. I was home alone, so I smoked a little drugs and then decided to sit down and watch the end of the game. And I'm like, what happened? I'm like, am I too stoned to realize that there was no replay? And then you texted. You're like, hey, there was no replay. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm not that high yet, but how do you not show that replay? Clearly our boy Bryce was not working that one, but
no.
It was really the perfect storm. You had the Riders team that had just played Winnipeg the prior Friday. Montreal had a bye. Like, you've seen this story a million and one times in professional football, right?
Yeah, like if it had gone kind of I expected, where the Riders hung around for a bit, but it was kind of a back and forth game. Both teams played fairly well. But the more rested team, who I mean, not that I think the Riders' short week was awful. It wasn't the worst you could possibly have. But the Owls were coming off a bye, and that is what that is. And they were the better rest team. So I thought in the end they would kind of pull it out and pull away with the victory. And I just didn't expect it to go quite the way it did. But the result was probably about as expected.
Oh, certainly. And at least this wasn't. And if you're looking apples to apples, remember last year when they went into Montreal and just got death starred?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was just,
and the Owls weren't even the Owls at that point.
No, like, it was comical how bad it is. Montreal is a tough place to play, and mm-hmm. I think after the Calgary loss to BC, I think you can say they're the best team in the league right now, right? Yeah. They got Cody Fajardo coming back. He's off the sixth game as of today. They are definitely the best team in the league. So you go into a difficult place to play off a shortish week, playing the best team in the league off a bye week. You're right. People were obviously disappointed. You're going to be disappointed when your team loses, unless you're me and you've just embraced it now. And they lost. Like, it was a close game. They didn't get death starred. I thought Shea Patterson looked good again. And it just, yep. they ran, it looked more to me mentally and physically like they ran out of gas, right? And at this point of the season, you know, seven games in, I think this team has yet to lose a game that they weren't expected to lose, right? They've done their job. They beat the teams they're supposed to beat. They've won the 50-50 games, and losing at Montreal, at BC, nobody's going to fault you for that, right? So
no. I think if you told Rider fans at the start of the year, after seven games, you'd be 5-2,
yeah,
I think everyone would be pretty happy with that, especially if you play four of those games now without Trevor Harris.
Yeah. Well,
and it's questionable whether this tough stretch is truly over, but there was, you know, when this season started, when we saw the schedule come out, this four-game stretch looked like a murderer's row.
Yeah, 100%.
Right, because you had Toronto that people thought was going to be better than they are. They're okay.
Yeah.
Then we obviously had BC, which I would expect to be good. Winnipeg, people thought would still be good. And then you had Montreal, which people thought would be good as well. Then you finally got the break with Edmonton and Ottawa. Well, both of those games are looking a little more questionable now than they did maybe at the start of the season. However, professional football, realistically, no game is easy. Yes, like 100%. So if you get out of this stretch 2-2, even with the state of Toronto and Winnipeg being what they are compared to preseason expectations, I think you're still pretty happy. And I think
2-2 with your backup quarterback.
Yes, with your backup. That's what I mean. Like this four game stretch specifically now without Trevor Harris, you got out of it 2-2. I think with Trevor Harris, you probably would like to have seen 3-1 the way things went. But they got out of it 2-2. They're 5-2 on the year. Trevor Harris did not practice on Tuesday, so it looks like they're going to keep him on the six for now because Shea Patterson's obviously done enough, and rightfully so, to sort of play this out now, and maybe we'll see Trevor Harris after the sixth game at this point, because there's no point in putting five games on the cap if you're going to pull him early at this point, so you might as well put him through all six.
Exactly. Give yourself some cap flexibility late in the season.
Yeah, I think Shea Patterson played well. He got away with a couple, but I mean, that happens from time to time. And that was really his first test of trying to drive the field for a game winning score. And it didn't end on his fault. He made the right reads. He made the right plays. He made some big second and third down conversions to keep that drive alive a couple of times. And so, it was maybe the first game where he looked more like a backup than we've seen in some other games, but he was still there. He still gave them a chance to win. And at this point, that's really still all you can ask out of the guy that is your backup quarterback.
And he still didn't turn the ball over, right? He's not lighting the world on fire. He's not throwing, you know, four touchdowns, but he's not turning the ball over, which is going to give you a chance to win. Which, speaking of giving you a chance to win, maybe people are going to start coming at us on social media for this, like they have been for years about our Zach Collaros takes, but this should be Frankie Hickson's team. He looked so much better than anything we've seen from AJ Ouellette. And I hate dumping on a guy like AJ Ouellette because he's marketable, he's a pro wrestler, he's everything we like in a guy, but man, I don't know if it was just that Frankie Hickson was that fresh from basically just being on the practice roster.
Sure, the freshness certainly helps. So I think even if AJ Ouellette had been playing well this year, it's still worth putting in your other running back from time to time just for that reason, because I think especially it's a position where you can't run the same guy all season.
No, certainly. Well, and it sucks that the way the ratio is set up, that's essentially like you're either on the injured list or on the practice roster because of the way that the roster is structured, right? So you can't just have Frankie Hickson in there to spell AJ Ouellette. Like, to me, after watching that game, they need to find a way to move the roster around so you have both guys dressed for a football game.
Mm-hmm.
I
would also argue at this point, given the game Frankie Hickson had, and it looks like this may be happening because on Tuesday today, Ouellette didn't practice as well. So maybe they may give him a little bit of an extended break here and let him come back fresh and see if he can restart his season, basically.
Yeah, because he has not looked like the AJ Ouellette of old. He looks like he's fighting something. And AJ Ouellette strikes me as the kind of guy that, even if he's 80%, he's not going to tell you he's 80%. He's going to go out and he's going to try to grind. He's going to try to live up to that contract, live up to the fan base, because the guy loves it there. But you're seeing more and more of this Corey Mace influence of going, all right, we've got 18 games. You know, Shea's been good enough. Frankie has been great in his first game. Let's roll with these guys. Let's get proper rest and let's get ready for the end of the season, right? So, again, 5-2 gives you that luxury, but it's just, again, such a different direction that the team has been taking in the best of ways, especially for two guys that all believe in, you know, big picture over week by week.
Yeah, process over results. And
yes,
this week now in particular against the Edmonton Elks is going to be extremely interesting. Jarius Jackson has now confirmed on the coach's show on 630 CHED that Trey Ford will be starting in this game on Saturday. So, and I mean, I think the initial point of what I'm going to make here stood even if McLeod Bethel Thompson was starting. Because I think Rider fans have seen this picture many, many times before. They're coming in, the Riders are playing fairly well. They're easily a top half team in this league. Probably, I would, you know, the third or fourth best team in the league right now, depending on what you think of Ottawa. And, you know, things are looking good. Things are looking positive. But here comes that winless team on the horizon. Which, I mean, everyone knows that the Riders were, what, that 1-1 in 17 Hamilton went 1 year, or 2-17 or something.
Yep.
Right? When the Riders were pretty good that year. So,
yep.
Like, this is an opportunity, as weird as it sounds, coming in and playing inarguably the worst team in the league right now. Playing them at home. We've seen this script so many times over the years. And this isn't even just a prove you're different from the Craig Dickinson era. This is prove you're different from, like, decades of Rider football. To come in here, because I think even with McLeod Bethel Thompson at quarterback, now I think people would have been far more confident with McLeod Bethel Thompson at quarterback that the Riders would probably win that game, but there would still be that thought in the back of your head that are going to be like, oh God, they're going to be the one to give the Elks the win. And now that Trey Ford is starting, thought is probably even louder than it was a week ago.
Well, I mean, the man just went out in one quarter and matched Zach Kolaris' 7-game total for touchdown passes. And, like, we've been saying it kind of tongue-in-cheek that, yeah, Edmonton's got their best player on the bench. No, Trey's out to play, and he's going to be starting. And, oh, my goodness, his highlight reel alone from that last game. Like, Trey, like, it is hard to single-handedly win a football game. Like, the only, like, it's football. It's almost impossible. Darian Durant during 2013 might be the closest thing I've ever seen to a man single-handedly winning a game for a team. Trey Ford has that ability. And you're right. This has classic trap game, classic Riders falling on their face after a pretty good season written all over it. Attendance is looking great for Saturday. It's a home game. It's Edmonton. They haven't won. You're right. This is like 50 years of Rider football where they lose this game. Not to mention the fact that, you know, maybe the CFL's most dynamic player is actually being allowed to play in this one. So it's going to be interesting. I feel like, and I'm hoping that the Fraser curse overcomes here. This just has like Trey Ford, 4 touchdowns in the air, 1 on the ground, like Edmonton somehow coming out with like a last second field goal win. Like I feel that to my core. Like the Riders are heavy favorites. Vegas has got them. Any objective metric makes you go, yeah, the Riders should win this one. I'm trusting my gut, and I think Trey Ford leads Edmonton to victory because this is 50 years of history, and Trey Ford is oh my goodness, bananas lands good.
Yeah, I mean, it's conflicting. I still haven't landed where I'm going. I'm still leaning toward the Riders, I think.
Of course. They are the better football team.
Yeah, they are the better football team, and I think Corey Mace will have that defense. I don't think there was – people will say, oh, you should prepare for both anyway. I don't think there was really much of a point in preparing all that deeply from McLeod Bethel Thompson before this game, whether we knew Trey Ford was starting or not, because he's your sort of standard drop-back quarterback. There isn't really anything too special there that you haven't seen before and you're not too worried about, especially for a guy who's coached with MBT before as well. So
exactly.
I think he knew that inside and out. It was, okay, this week we're working on contain because we cannot let Trey Ford get out of the pocket.
oh my God. Hey, right? Because, yeah, if he does, like that one play where he's running towards a sideline, he's like dead to rights, looks like he's going to run out of bounds, take a sack. He stops and darts one downfield. Like, my goodness, that is exciting. So but the nice thing is, too, I think, and this is going to sound crazy, but I think they had a better chance of ridering this game if MBT was starting compared to Trey Ford.
Well, because... it's definitely more of a ridering if MBT is starting. With Trey Ford in there, you could see realistically how the Elks could potentially win that game if he goes like bananas land and is Trey Ford at this absolute peak. Then you're like, yeah, I mean, that's just what this guy does, right? So it's
right,
less it's less of a ridering with Trey Ford unless for some reason he stinks and they still win.
That's fair. I feel like Corey Mace is smart enough to know, and like you mentioned the defense, he is going to be sitting down with these guys being like, okay guys, we went from playing a giveaway prone pocket passer that really is not the same player he ever was in Toronto to the most dynamic athlete at quarterback in
maybe the most
dynamic, dare I say
maybe the most athletic player in the league.
Yes,
maybe
and dare
both.
I say yeah. The most athletic quarterback in North America.
Yeah.
Like you don't see guys like you see guys even in the NFL that can kind of do what he does. Like I think like
Lamar Jackson's the closest. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would absolutely agree. But like I've never seen Lamar Jackson run face first to the sideline, turn and throw that like 50-yard bomb downfield.
No, no. But in terms of like the overall athletic ability, he would be his closest comparison. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So you've got a guy that is so special. And again, Canadian guy, like I think this maybe wakes the riders up a bit, right? Like you went from having MBT snooze. Oh yeah. He's like Zach Kolaris, but worse. you went from
like Jake Mayer, but old.
Exactly. Right. You went from that classic quarterback to, oh shit, we actually have to game plan for this guy. And I just feel like the focus will be better, right? I feel like the focus, the drive, everything will be better because you're facing a real threat. And I hope they don't ride it up, but I still feel like Trey Ford, this is the ultimate chip on the shoulder, fuck you game to everybody at Edmonton. Like, this kid is going to come out and ball out like you've never seen a quarterback ball out. And the thing that worries me is I like Shea Patterson, but a Shea Patterson, like, this has 45-42 written all over it. And can Shea Patterson be that guy? And that's where I...
Well, the good news is Edmonton's defense sucks, so...
Well, that's it. So Shea Patterson's going to have a chance to be like, all right, I can be that guy against this terrible defense. So I think this game has entertaining as hell written all over it. Like, you're not going to see that dog shit bomber game that was on, you know, last week. You're not going to see that. You're going to see, like, I don't know. This is giving me vibes of... You know, the weather's going to be nice. It's not going to be a factor. You're going to be able to air it out. Like, this could be the game of the week. And I still think it goes to Edmonton because Trey Ford is at least, okay, Edmonton covers the spread for sure in this one.
Yeah, that seems plausible.
So I'm looking forward to it. I am like, as a man that loves football and is now leaning on the Bill Simmons 5-year grace period because my team is boring and dog shit. I'm just looking forward. It's like how you've gotten me into college football. I want to see some chaos. I want to see my friends be happy that cheer for the Riders. I want to see half my kids be, or sorry, 2/3 of my kids be happy because the Riders are winning.
Yeah.
So it's going to be good. Looking forward to it.
Another Canadian quarterback that is kind of in the news right now is of course one, Nathaniel York. As he was unceremoniously dumped by the New York Giants.
Yeah.
And think pretty clear at this point that the politics of the NFL are still politicking. And the end of the road is coming, I think, for Nathan Rourke in the NFL. And I know there's been a lot of discussion about how he should come up to the CFL now because there's no point. I don't know if I entirely agree with that. I think... You know, he's certainly within his right and should exhaust all NFL options before he does. I know he's going to work out with the Atlanta Falcons. I don't really see how that's a better fit for him, considering they already have 12 quarterbacks on the roster. But anyway.
They just drafted a quarterback. Like,
yeah, you know, that's what I mean.
You know, you're not getting a crack there.
They already spent $300 million on Kirk Cousins and then drafted two quarterbacks.
Yeah, exactly. They took a quarterback in the first round when everybody's like, what are you doing? You just brought in Kirk Cousins, right? Like, maybe the most controversial pick of the first round of the NFL draft. And you're going to go, yeah,
I don't know if that's the spot for him. But hey, if that's the one place that gets him into a camp for now, then so be it. But I do think long term and bigger picture,
it is worth, and I know people are saying, oh, he needs to get on a football field, he needs to play. I'm like, eh, another few months isn't really going to make a big deal to them, to him at this point. We've seen plenty of guys go down to the NFL from the CFL, miss like two or three seasons and barely play any games whatsoever and come back and be just fine.
Right,
so
right.
I'm not really concerned about that. But I think in regards to when and where he should come back, I mean, there are different options to where, and we can get into what may be the most beneficial for both a team and for him in the long run later. But I think it is worth it for him to wait until January to see if yes. that's when he needs to come back to the CFL or not, because then the caps wipe and start clean. Free agency hasn't started yet in the CFL. So basically all nine teams will have approximately $4 million available on their cap roughly to decide how much they want to allocate to probably the guy who'll end up being the best quarterback of this generation in this league.
Yes. Now, here's my only thought on that. And this is where I disagree a little bit, that especially if you're the Riders, where you've got an opportunity here that Trevor Harris, you're going to open up a bunch of cap room because Trevor Harris looks like he's going to play the full six games, right?
But I think his salary was mostly bonus, so I don't know how much they're actually saving right now.
Right, but there is some degree of savings there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's not like, and Trevor Harris, unlike the Zach Kolaris mess, as we found out in Winnipeg, has no guaranteed money for next year. So Trevor
well,
Harris...
Well, he doesn't even have a contract for next year.
So. Well, that's it. You could literally move on from Trevor Harris, right? Here yeah. is my school of thought, because you got to think outside of, and maybe he goes back to BC because of the connection there. And if you're BC, you ask a king's ransom for VA, right? Yep. Trey Ford's the guy in Edmonton. You're not looking there. Calgary's going to be in the mix.
If he wants to stay there, I mean, the way he's been treated, I may want to get the heck out of there.
No, that's fair. And Trey Ford will be able to demand quite a bit of money depending how the rest of the season goes. You're definite as of right now. I think it's Calgary, it's Saskatchewan, it should be Winnipeg. It won't be because they're in love with Zach, who's horrifically overrated. Toronto should be in the mix because to me, they should punt Chad Kelly to the sun. And that's kind of your big four. I get it. Every team in the CFL should be finding a way to bring
Hamilton as well. I think they would be interested as well, because I think it's worth potentially moving on from Bo. As good as Bo Levi Mitchell has played this year,
yes.
If you can get Nathan Rourke, then yeah. I mean, realistically, all nine teams would probably change their quarterback if Nathan Rourke wanted to come play for them.
My argument would be unless you have Trey Ford or Vernon Adams.
Even then.
But even then, you're using that guy as an asset, right? Like if you're BC, he wants to come back to BC. You know, you could
which seems like the most likely thing.
Certainly.
He spoke very highly of BC and everything, and a lot of it may depend on, you know, what coaches he likes, and is it a Rick Campbell thing? Does he want to follow Jordan Maksimek wherever he ends up as a head coach? Which right now, right. Edmonton is the only opening, and I don't know how many openings there are going to be this year based on the way things are going. So,
yeah, right. Yeah, Winnipeg's not blowing out O'Shea after one bad year. So, but here's where the Riders can come in. And this is what I think any team should seriously consider doing is you sign him this year. You sign him after Labor Day. Okay. You give him as much money as you can against the cap this year. If you go a little into that gray area of the slap on the wrist over the cap, you do it. Not with the expectation that he's going to come in and play. Like, let's make that clear. If you're the Riders, I'm signing him to a prorated maximum money contract for this year, but just being like, okay, we just want you in the building. You know, if Trevor Harris goes down, yeah, we're going to accelerate this, but we want you in the building. You sign him to a two-year deal. You give him as much money as you possibly can this year, and then next year kicks in that he makes Zach Kolaris money, but actually deserves it. That's almost a way to say, okay, Nathan, we're going to pay you to just be in the league. We're going to pay you $300,000-$400,000, whatever we can, just hang out, learn the playbook, meet with our coaches and all that kind of stuff. And then you're going to play next year for $600K, essentially a way to get Nathan Rourke to play for 1 year for $1 million. If I'm the Riders, I'm doing that. Right? Like I think you have an established guy in Trevor Harris, and again, Nathan Rourke is better than Trevor Harris, but Rourke coming in mid-season may not be light years ahead of Trevor Harris like he would be after a full year in the building, right? So And then that gives you the option that if Trevor Harris goes down in week 17, well, shit, Nathan, I know we said we're going to play you next year. You're in a contract. Let's make this happen. And all of a sudden, you've got Nathan Rourke starting playoff games instead of Shea Patterson. Again, no offense to Shea Patterson. So if I'm the Riders, that's what I'm looking at, because I feel like thanks to injuries, and I don't think they're a cap team this year, you have the ability to do that, and it's a unique ability for this football club, especially the way that their financials are run, the way their year-end is run, that they could bring this guy in and essentially pay him $1 million for one season of football. And I think that's what you need to do.
I mean, potentially. I mean, it's an option. It's a thought.
I just know everybody's going to be trying to do that.
I think if I'm signing Nathan Rourke, I'm trying to get him for at least a couple of seasons, if not more. Right. At least under contract. So then if he goes off and goes down south again, you still own his rights.
Right. So extend my thought to a 3-year deal, right? You pay him money to hang out, to vibe, and then he gets 600 grand and then 700 grand the year after, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a possibility. But it'll just be fascinating to see how it plays out. I think, you know, he will make a decision that's right for him, of course. Yeah. I think it's pretty obvious there's no team in the league that needs him worse right now than the Edmonton Elks. Not only for anything on the field, but to just ignite the fan base off the field as well.
Right.
And because they also don't have a first round pick, so they're not going to get Curtis Rourke. And they may have pissed off Trey Ford enough that he might be walking out the door, depending on what they do in the offseason. So, I mean, the future is pretty bleak there right now, because other than, you know, like last year, you know, we knew there was Drew Brown waiting for someone to falter, so there was a starting quarterback available somewhere. This year, I mean, other than maybe Davis Alexander, who looks like he may have something, there's no guy waiting to replace even an aging Trevor Harris, because, I mean, it's 2 years now he's had injury problems. So the question is, the Riders, it feels like unless they can get, you know, unless they can somehow draft Curtis Rourke or sign Nathan Rourke, are pretty much stuck with Shea Patterson as their guy next year if Trevor Harris decides he no longer wants to play football or play football here. Not that I have any inside information about whether that's going to happen one way or the other, but the guy is 38, so it could happen.
Right.
So you're kind of stuck with that scenario, and, you know, if you're the Elks, there's, unless Trey Ford wants to stick around, there's no other option. You know, Winnipeg is now stuck really without another option other than Zach Collaros. Like, there isn't this guy waiting in the wings somewhere to come in and suddenly be good, so that sort of ratchets up sort of the pressure on some teams to try and land Nathan Rourke even more than it would have been. And unfortunately for the Elks, they don't even have the option to even try and draft Curtis Rourke, because probably any pick they can get is going to be too late, because they gave away what is could very well likely be the first overall pick for a guy in a draft this year. So,
as CFL meme says on Twitter or on Instagram, that is a certified Chris Jones moment.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.